This is episode 330, dated Monday, March 11th, 2024.
You are listening to Sports Roundtable.
Hi, everybody, and welcome once again to Sports Roundtable. I'm Bob Branco. This is episode 330, dated Monday, March 11th, 2024. Allow me to introduce the sports spelunkers, which means we are exploring caves. That's the official definition of spelunker for those who are unaware and was curious. We start out with Peter Altschul.
It's actually inventing, since we're the sports spelunkers, we're exploring sports-related caves or caves-related sports or something. Anyway, thank you, Bob. It is miserable here in Coos Bay, but it's supposed to get really nice beginning on Wednesday. It might get to 70 degrees over the weekend. So we're very much looking forward to some early spring weather here.
Yeah. We're sunny and below normal temperatures for a little while. So we're going to have to grin and bear it till it warms up later on in the week, I think. Mitch Pomerantz.
Good afternoon. It's 63 and sunny here, and we may not get any more rain for the rest of the summer, the rest of the spring and summer. So we're finally drying out and turning into the semi-arid desert that Southern California is supposed to be. But it's good to be here as your designated hitter for Luther.
And we're in a tropical forest, Mitch, in Oregon, so different climates.
Yep, indeed.
Don Wardlow.
And it's windy, but it finally quit raining here in Jersey. It's been raining for so long that it's really played havoc with my back, and that is not fun.
And Reverend Michael Garrett.
Well, I'm trying to figure out what time it is. And 2 weeks ago, I was in Hawaii. Last week, I was in Georgia. And now I'm back in Missouri City, Texas. But it is 72 degrees.
Are you saying you have jet lag, Mike?
I have, my body clock is all out of whack right now.
Yeah,
Okay, so let me thank those people who make it possible for our show to be available. We have Raymond Gay, our producer. Tom and Lynn from Rosie's Place Chatline, thank you for posting our shows. We have our media outlets, thank you for airing us when you do. And we also have Jacqueline Sylvia from JS Web Solutions, thank you so much for archiving our shows on my website. Just go to www.brancoevents.com, arrow down until you get to Sports Roundtable Podcasts. When you click on them, you will see most of our archived shows from latest to earliest.
Merci, Jackie.
And I want to thank Cindy for acting as our host for today's program, and also Brad for mainstreaming us on ACB Media 5, in which case I will give out my email address for people who don't necessarily have that. If anybody has any questions about Sports Roundtable, are there things that you want us to talk about that we don't talk about very often, or whatever the case may be, any comments you have about the show, let us know by writing bobbranco93@gmail.com. That's Bob Branco, BOBBRANCO, 93@gmail.com. I want to start with the NFL because there have been some major moves this week, significant moves, especially with quarterbacks. Mac Jones is on his way to Jacksonville from New England. And Kirk Cousins is also on the move. There may be others that I'm not thinking about right off the top. Maybe we can hear some comments about some NFL moves.
Russell Wilson going to the Steel City.
Oh, yes.
Baker Mayfield signed a big contract to stay in Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
And now, for Pittsburgh, I'm wondering
back what move, too.
Yes. You can explain
I want to touch on that. Let's get through talking about the quarterback, but I want to touch on the running back move.
Okay. Well, I wanted to mention about Pittsburgh. Now that Wilson is over there, what does that mean for Pickett?
It means he's going to have a nice seat on the bench.
That's interesting. We'll have Pittsburgh Penguin duo, Wilson and Pickett. We'll love it.
Oh,
that's a good one, Bob.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of times these rookies, ordinarily, you know, I guess I'm old school. I think rookies, when they come to the NFL, they shouldn't, all of them shouldn't be thrown in the fire. And I think they do need some time to develop. And hopefully this will give Pickett a little time to develop.
The best example of a young quarterback who sat for a year and it did him a world of good was Patrick Mahomes, who sat behind Alex Smith his first year.
Yes. Well, look at Jordan Love. You know,
well, he sat for a little longer than a year, though.
longer than a year, but it gave him time to develop.
Yep.
And he's a fairly decent quarterback now.
And so if Jones can't get it done in Pittsburgh, that means he can't cross the picket line.
Yo.
you guys are on a roll today.
I'm just not sure, and I admit my prejudice. I had Wilson as my starting fantasy quarterback 2 years ago, and then last year I had to pick him up when Burrow got hurt. I think Wilson's past his prime. And I'm not sure Pittsburgh, in fact, they're talking about trading Deontay Johnson. I'm not sure that Pittsburgh has a receiver that really is going to help Wilson.
Well, they say that one of the problems he has, you know, these guys are height impaired.
Yes.
But he doesn't see the middle of the field. There's a lot of open spaces in the middle of the field. You know, his balls are up the sideline and he has to roll out to make good throws. So if he can't see the middle of the field, he's not playing the whole, you know, he's not utilizing the whole field. So that might be a problem, especially if they don't have a good tight end or somebody who can block for him.
I mean, my sort of take on this is that if Wilson can't succeed in Pittsburgh, picket line, non-picket line, whatever, he can't succeed anywhere, not even with the New York Jets. So, you know, I think this is his last best shot. If he doesn't, you know, I'm not sure he can either, Mitch. He's you know, the question is, you know, I suspect that what's going to happen is he's going to be, you know, the sort of manager quarterback. He's not going to be asked to do too many, you know, big things. He's going to
exactly
hand the ball
off. Pittsburgh got lucky because Denver's paying the bulk of his salary.
I know.
All Pittsburgh's got to pay is the league minimum.
Well, hey, you know, if it works, it works. You know, it's a worthwhile gamble for Pittsburgh, I think.
I won't draft him, but, you know, I wish him well.
So
what's going to happen to Justin Fields?
No word yet.
Maybe the Patriots.
Yeah, I thought about that, too.
I'm interested.
Kirk Cousins has to be dealt with first. If Atlanta or Washington want a quarterback, they want Cousins far and away ahead of Justin Fields. So once Cousins has a landing spot.
Cousins is in Atlanta.
Yeah, Cousins went to the Falcons.
What did that happen? Okay, I haven't looked since this morning. So that's official now.
Yeah, it's official.
So because I was going to talk
knowing New England Fields will go there.
That's an interesting place for him to go. But I'm sort of intrigued with Atlanta because every year for the past two or three years, Atlanta's been the hot team in the NFC South, which is not a very good, you know.
They don't have any hot teams.
Well, but Atlanta's supposed to be the hottest of a bunch of tepid teams and every year they fall apart and it's always because of, you know, quarterback play. Well, Kirk Cousins, you know, is a pretty good quarterback, you know, whatever you want to talk about his playoff runs. And so my sort of take about this is that, you know, if Atlanta can't win with Kirk Cousins, they can't win at all. I mean, you know, cause Kirk's pretty solid. They have a good support system around him offensively. They have, you know, the tight end. They have a couple of wide receivers. You know, it seems to be a good place for them, you know, a good pickup for them.
Peter, you forget the biggest handicap the Atlanta Falcons have had the last several years, Arthur Smith.
Well, that's gone. That's true. Oh. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. Thank you, Mitch. You're right.
Yeah.
But anyway, this might be the year of the Falcon. You know, they have what's it's the year of the Falcon next year. So we'll see. So Mike, you want to talk about running backs?
I thought it was pretty interesting. At least three named running backs have moved teams. Yeah. Saquon Barkley to the Eagles. DeAndre Swift has changed teams. And Tony Pollard has changed teams. The interesting thing from a salary standpoint, now the Eagles are going to pay Swift 3 years, $37 million. But Swift and Pollard both got 3 years, $24 million. I thought that was very interesting. Pollard could have stayed. I mean, he got the franchise tag this past year, which was a little over $10 million. But he signs an average $8 million contract with Tennessee. I wonder if Dallas would have been offering him that same level of contract. If they did, would he have stayed? I don't know. It seems like he must have wanted to leave.
So I want to talk about Barkley for a second, because as you said, Mike went to the Eagles for a lot of money. I'm sort of surprised Philadelphia took him. If for no other reason, because he regularly gets hurt. Last year he didn't, but he has an injury problem. So I'm sort of curious to see how he does there. And as for the Giants, I don't know what to make of them. Now they don't have a running back. They don't have a quarterback. They don't have anything as far as I can tell. Now maybe they'll
get a quarterback. They're sticking with their quarterback with Daniel.
As I said, they don't have a quarterback.
yeah.
okay.
I mean, I'm sorry to be so snarky, but I mean, they really don't have a quarterback. I mean, he wasn't very good last year. He got hurt on top of it. And, who do they have around him? You know, it's the same problem that you were talking about with Pittsburgh. I don't know who, if they had a decent quarterback, I don't know who the Giants have around him. They don't have a running back, clearly. They don't. Now, my understanding is there's lots of wide receivers and running backs in the draft. So, you know, that might help solve some of the problems, but. You know, relying on rookies to solve all your problems is never a good gamble.
Speaking of wide receivers, Judy went from Denver to Cleveland.
To Cleveland, yeah.
That'll be a pretty good receiving for Amari Cooper and Jerry Judy, although Judy has not come anywhere close to what they expected of him when he came out of Alabama.
And from what I understand, his contract wasn't, he didn't get, you know, huge money, but it was decent. They didn't give up a lot.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with Cleveland is their quarterback. I mean, maybe Watson will go back to the way he was, but he sure hasn't shown anything the past couple of years.
I don't think he's been healthy.
Well, that's also true. I mean, both physically and psychologically, right? All the stuff he had,
Flacco says he wants to come back, but he wants to be assured he's going to be able to play. So I wonder, you know, what's going on in the locker room.
Deshaun is getting paid huge money. He's going to have to lose that job.
If Cleveland had a decent quarterback, that might be one of the better teams in the AFC. They may yet be one of the better teams in the AFC, but you know, when they played Houston in their playoff, they got steamrolled. Their defense was terrible. Cleveland's defense was terrible.
Flacco had an amazing run before the playoffs, but then he was right out
again. Yeah, he did.
But, you know, we keep talking about the playoffs being, another level of season where it's a different game. It's a different game.
So, Michael, what are the Cowboys going to do with Pollard gone? Are they going to draft a running back?
It's very interesting. The Cowboys not only lost Pollard, they lost Garth Armstrong and Tyler Biadasz, or whatever his name is, the center, one of their primary edge rushers. They lost the running back. Probably not going to deal with Tyron Smith. So they got some big holes to fill.
Yeah,
a linebacker, a center. running back. It's going to be really interesting to see what they draft. And they're in the 24th spot. So it's going to be very, very difficult, I think, for them to put this team back together.
I never didn't think about that, Michael, but Dallas really has a lot of work to do. A lot of work to do.
Yeah.
I don't know who's going to be any good in the NFC East next year. I mean,
Philadelphia.
With them picking up Barkley, they're going to be just fine. Although that'll mean too that the quarterback won't have as much on his shoulders, and they may run the ball more than they pass it,
which would be fine.
If he stays healthy, they're going to be tough. But they had a lot of, to me, internal problems. And Joe, if he comes on, he can probably speak to it. You know, that they had a lot of internal problems that messed up the team.
Yeah, they did.
So if they can correct those, and it probably came, indications I got was that some of it came from the coaching staff.
The head coach is still there.
Yeah, but I mean, you wonder if it was the coordinators and the position coaches.
Yeah,
they all couldn't get along or something. I'm not sure what it was.
Something was really wrong.
What's going to be interesting is what's going to happen in Jacksonville. They just acquired Mac Jones from the Patriots, who's never been a backup. Now he's going to have to be a backup to Trevor Lawrence.
He's going to be a backup now.
Yeah, he is.
But I was going to say about Philadelphia, though. Kelce just retired.
Right.
So their starting center, the anchor of their offensive line, and I forget, but one of their top defensive guys just retired as well, I think.
I think I heard that too.
Yeah. So they'll have some work to do as well.
And the thing is, it is really a mystery to me as to what went wrong with the Eagles the last quarter of the season. Something fell apart big time. And I saw a piece that talked about how, you remember what that they, their head of security when he was suspended for the rest of the year after he
did. Yeah.
That apparently caused a major chemistry shakeup in the team, but I find that hard to believe that would cause such a, you know, spiral.
What that says is that team, the culture was very fragile.
Yes.
And it was just not good.
So there's been a lot of talk about the Las Vegas Raiders. They got apparently a really good defensive pass rusher whose name I can't remember. So the talk is their defense has been strengthened a lot. The problem with the Raiders, of course, is they don't have a quarterback, but if they can get that straightened out, maybe they'll be a little better next year. Denver lost their center, who is one of the best centers in football, apparently. I forgot where he went, but he's no longer with Denver. So I don't know. Well, I guess we'll see what happens.
Indeed. Now, Don, you wanted to bring something. Oh, I'm sorry. Michael, you go ahead.
Just quickly, let me throw this. The Texans lost two key players, too. They lost Devin Singletary. I remember where he signed. That was a surprise to me. I mean, he was their leading running back. I thought they would keep him. And Jonathan Greenard, one of their top edge rushers. So they've got some pieces to fill.
You know, it's interesting, all these running backs. Michael, you talked about it earlier. Running backs seem to be, like, totally disrespected. You know, oh, we can lose these people. They got too much money. We'll get from the draft. And, you know, running backs just seem to be the bottom of the barrel when it comes to
because football's become a passing game.
That's true.
Part of it.
But, you know, you'd think that some of these better running backs would get more love, but they clearly aren't. There's too much love in Green Bay for their quarterback or something.
So since I haven't had sports on, I haven't checked anything since this morning, is Derrick Henry still with the Titans?
To my knowledge.
I haven't heard anything about Henry at all.
I
don't think he is, but that would be a heck of a tandem.
Well, and the fact is though that Tony Pollard is not a number one running back. I think we saw that last year, Michael. and Pollard would be a perfect complement to Henry.
Yes, that's what I said. That would be one heck of a tandem.
Yeah.
The thing is, he did have over 1,000 yards, but it just wasn't breakaway yardage.
No, no.
Before we get our participants involved, Don wanted to spend a couple of minutes on an incident that happened in a college game.
Oh, yeah.
A woman's game, no less, Don.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Bob and I are old enough to remember when women were referred to as the gentler sex or the fairer sex. Well, we sure can't say that now, especially after what took place in Greenville, South Carolina. After Saturday was the most insane ending I've seen, and I've been watching college basketball for a long time. Tennessee came so close to beating South Carolina, and South Carolina on a three-pointer by a woman 6'7" tall, never took a three-pointer all year, Camilla Cardozo, and she hit one. And then yesterday, you know, what could have possibly topped that? But they got into a brawl 2 minutes to go at the end of the game against LSU. LSU, they got a player, Flaje Johnson, and she punched one of the South Carolina players. There were a lot of them who were involved. Camilla Cardozo, the same one who hit the three-pointer the day before, she ended up with a bloody lip. But when everything settled down, and it took 20 minutes for it to settle down, but there was one bench player for South Carolina left on the bench and none for LSU. Everybody else had been ejected from the game, and the players who were ejected, at least some of them, are going to have to miss round one when their team is in the NCAA. They're going to have to sort out how to manage that. But it was ugly, and there were at least two civilians got onto the court, which shouldn't be allowed to happen. One of them being the brother of Blasey Johnson, and now I've got conflicting information about whether he was or was not arrested, but he definitely was let off in handcuffs, absolutely for sure. And he may have in fact been arrested, which is a shame. You'd never want that to happen, and civilians have no business getting anywhere near the court. I don't know how it happened, but it was a tremendously loony ending. And the worst of it, I feel bad for Brad Muller, the announcer for South Carolina. He works all alone. There's no partner for him who could have gone and checked out what the referees were up to and what the final arrangement was going to be, who was getting ejected. At LSU, they have Patrick Wright and Shahida Williams. So Patrick could have continued the broadcast and Shahida could have checked out what was going on. I've been unable to get a hold of the LSU broadcast. I was recording the South Carolina broadcast live as it happened, but it was just nuts. It was a crazy game.
But Dom, the best part of the weekend was that USC took Stanford down, and it wasn't even as a result of Juju Watkins. She only scored 9 points. And
won anyway, even without her.
They won anyway. I forget the lady's name who was the leading scorer, but SC is going to get a pretty good seeding, I think, in the tournament.
And then
to make things even better, in a game that Arizona phoned in, USC beat Arizona on Saturday. We're still 3 games under .500, but that was the highlight of the year, beating the Wildcats, who I don't think are all that good. I think they're going to get knocked out early. I think the Wildcats are an overrated basketball team.
No, you're with the men, Mitch? The Arizona men? Okay, because you were jumping.
Yeah, and they were ranked fifth.
Yeah.
And SC played a great game, but the Arizona guard, whose name escapes me, Love, I think, as a candidate for player of the year in the Pac-12, and I think SC held him to like 3 or 4 points.
Well, as I said last week, Arizona has lost my respect because of their first round knockout by Princeton last year. And I went to Princeton and I'm delighted that Princeton won, but really Arizona? So, yeah. You know, they have to prove to me that they're a serious contender.
If I were going to Vegas, I'm sorry, Michael.
I said, that's why it's called March Madness.
That's right. If I were going to Vegas in March rather than in April, I would see if I could get a sports book to take a bet that Arizona won't make it to the Sweet 16.
Oh, I think that's a good bet.
Yeah.
Did you hear whether Princeton is going to get to the NCAA, Peter?
Well, you know, the way the Ivy League works is they have a four game semifinals and finals. And if you don't win, you generally don't make the tournament.
Yep.
So now the women may be a little different because I know Princeton last year was in the top 25.
So what happened with the guys who beat them?
Well, Princeton either tied or won the regular season, but the playoffs start until next weekend.
We
won't know who's in the tournament until Sunday morning at like 8 o'clock in the morning Pacific time.
So that might be something I can listen to because one of their announcers is a guy named Derek Jones who went to the same college that I did. So I love listening to him when I can. He's one of several play-by-play guys that Princeton has. They rotate several men in and out.
I haven't following it all that closely, but Princeton has done very well the past two or three or four weeks, 3 weeks. I think they've won all their games. And so I'm guessing Yale was good for a while and then they got Princeton killed them. So, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, the playoffs, it used to be the Ivy Leagues didn't have a playoff, you know, but now they do. You know, the top four, you know, play in the, you know, how it works, you know, the two games and then the finals. And you know how these things, smaller conferences work. Usually if the team who wins the tournament makes the NCAA tournament. And
you got it.
You know how that works. So,
I got a quick question for Don and then I want to go back to the Ivy League. Peter, did you hear what Kim Mulkey said about the Cardoza? She wishes that she had hit Reese instead.
Oh my.
Yeah. Apparently, Miss Reese is a big fighter, so Mulkey wished to quit that. And then the article I read said that South Carolina looks a little vulnerable. So, you know, they didn't look all that good against LSU.
They're undefeated for the regular season, so it's, you know.
Yeah, they are.
LSU played them two very tight games. One was in Louisiana, that one South Carolina won by 6 points, and then yesterday Carolina won by 7. But LSU, you know, really played them tighter than anybody, including Tennessee until Saturday when Tennessee got down 23 points early on, and then they rallied like mad and got to a lead, and then Cardoso hit that 3-pointer to win the ball game. But before that, though, Tennessee and LSU, the two games hadn't been all that much, but they made up for it on Saturday.
Michael, you wanted to mention one more thing on the Ivy League, and then I want to bring our participants on the program.
What do you guys think about the vote? Which Ivy League?
Dartmouth.
It was Dartmouth.
Yeah,
to go. Voted to unionize. Gotta like it.
I totally oppose it. I think it's a terrible idea. It's going to go to the NLRB and none of the 15 players, the 13 of the 15 who voted for it, they'll all be 5 years down the road working stockbrokers or insurance salesmen.
What's their reasoning before this
gets adjudicated?
What's their reasoning?
They want a share of the pie, I guess. And They think they're employees of the school, and if they're employees, they believe they have a right to be in a union. They joined SEIU, which is not, when I worked in government, years ago, SEIU was one of the more militant labor unions, certainly in California. So good luck. I can imagine the day that if this ever does come to fruition, that a unionized basketball team will be in an arena of a team that they're likely to lose to by 20 or 30 points or only there for the payday. And the player said, no, we're going to have a wildcat strike. We're not going to play. We're not going to lose 95 to 45. So, I think the whole idea of unionizing college athletes is just not a good idea.
I agree with you, Mitch. It's going to cause the problems.
As we said, and as I said in my promo to the show today, madness is in the air in more ways than one.
You got that right. Weird stuff
going on in sports.
All right. So I would like to welcome our participants to ask questions or take part in our discussion. There's a lot on the table with the NBA, NFL, NHL, baseball. I'd like to get to if possible. Anything's on the table for everybody. So let's see what we got. Cindy, do we have any hands raised at the moment?
Let's see. No, sir, we do not. Covering everything so well.
So if somebody else raise a hand, let us know, interrupt us, and we'll happily.
Oh, I will. Don't have no fear.
I just want to remind you that you're doing great. So I wanted to go back to the LSU South Carolina game because I found the commentary on ESPN Radio really interesting. They had, first, for two reasons. They had as sort of a commentary was a former retired NFL player. I can't remember who it was talking about, you know, what happened. And part of what he said was, I can't remember which team it was. He said, whoever started the fight, the other team sort of got off the bench to support their star player. You know, it was getting off the bench and they were doing exactly the kinds of things that, and he sort of described it as if gender didn't matter, which sort of talks about how different things are even than 10 years ago. When if this happened to men, which happens once in a while, very rarely, that's one thing, but they're using sort of male sort of, male norms. It's now filtered down to female basketball, with women's basketball, which I never thought I would see in my lifetime.
That's
a good thing.
Peter, the way it was, Claude J. Johnson from LSU, she first of all committed a flagrant foul on one of the South Carolina players, Fulwiley is her last name, Malaysia Fulwiley, and then Johnson punched Fulwiley as if the foul wasn't bad enough.
Right.
And then the third woman in the fight, as they would have said in hockey, was Melissa Cardozo, and she decked Johnson, the LSU player, and Cardozo got a bloody lip for her trouble. It was ugly and gory, and the part of the punishment, because she was third woman in the fight, is she's going to miss South Carolina's first game in the NCAA when they're going to be playing a 16 seed anyway, and they could play. Yeah,
what the ESPN guy was talking about is people getting off the bench, to support their people.
Yeah.
And what struck me about the commentary was not that it happened. This is, sort of normal stuff. It's not good stuff, but this happens regularly. But the fact that they would use sort of football /
men had been involved instead of women. Yes, the announcer now, the ESPN women, they tried to bury it. They didn't verbalize at all when the fight was going on, except one woman said, oh, we don't want this, which we don't, but
no.
It had to be described. And on radio, Brad Muller certainly did. Boy, did he described it beautifully when he described the punch that Johnson hit Fulwiley with. And by the way, why are these people called like Malaysia and Flauge? What happened to Debbie and Sue and Jennifer? What happened to normal names, people?
It's the current day society, Don.
Yeah. Well, and I would also say if you look at crime statistics and women will say, well, it's part of equality, but I think I think women are committing more crimes. I think women are violent crimes using guns. I just think it's the nature. And I think a lot of these young women, when they're growing up, they're playing against boys.
That's right.
You know, they're playing with their big brothers or their little brothers. Right. And, you know, they pattern their behavior after what they see, you know, in the boys game, in the men's game.
I do want to get to MLB. I wanted to get your opinion on, for example, the Red Sox played two games in the Dominican Republic as part of their spring training regimen. How do you feel about going to the Dominican? Somebody I actually spoke with is against it. I don't see why they should be.
I love it. I think it's
great. I mean, Dominican Republic is the stomping ground for a lot of the baseball talent that develops. I don't see why there's an issue.
You got it. And that stadium was named Juan Marichal Stadium. That's where they played. And he was the first one who came from there to America. And then later he became a politician in the Dominican Republic.
I think every Major League Baseball team has at least one, if not more, Dominican players. I'm surprised the next World Baseball Congress, the finals will probably be Dominican Republic versus Japan, but I think it's fantastic. You know, the Dominican Republic, the biggest problem the Dominican Republic has is that they share a border with Haiti. But aside from that, I think it's fantastic, and you're seeing more and more really outstanding young ball players coming out of the Dominican.
Did any of you happen to observe the gesture that was made by the Tampa Bay Rays this weekend against the Red Sox for one of the games? They fielded an entire Dominican lineup. Entirely no. Dominican. As
I didn't
a gesture.
Know that. Well, that's great.
That's what they did.
Especially
they
sure down there.
They made sure that every player in the starting lineup is Dominican.
And you know the stadium was full. And I didn't hear the broadcast, from what I've heard about it, that there was they had the drums and they had their horns, and it was almost like a soccer match in Latin America.
And I get a big bang out of the PA announcer. He tries to pronounce all the names, even names that are not Dominican. Like, for example, the Red Sox have a catcher named Connor Wong. Connor Wong.
I wish I could have heard that.
And he did it by
Dodger, the ex-Dodger farmhand.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Well, you want to talk about unusual names, and he's from the Dominican. The Dodgers left fielder this year is Oscar Hernandez.
Exactly. Yes.
Oh, I got a funnier name for you. He's a backup catcher with the Tigers. His last name is Bamboom.
Bamboom.
Oh, yeah. He's a career minor leaguer. Anthony Bamboom. He actually did a brief stint in Oklahoma City 2 or 3 years back. So yeah, Anthony Bamboom.
By the way, Mitch, while we're waiting for hands to be raised, and Cindy, please feel free to interrupt us whenever that happens. Mitch,
I have one.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. Thank
Let's
you,
Cindy.
Mitch, I thought of you because the Dodgers are in a little bit of chaos right now. Mookie's going to play shortstop. I understand.
Yeah, and one of our local columnists, Bill Plaschke, who's always going after the Dodgers, he said, why are they making the movement now? Well, they're making the move now because that Gavin Lux is having some issues, having not played for over a year, and he can make throws from second to first, but he made four errant throws in six games at shortstop.
Well, if he hasn't played in over a year, who played last year? Mookie played wherever he played, second, the outfield.
Mookie played second, and Miguel Rojas played shortstop, the super utility man who used to be with the Marlins. And what people are not remembering is Mookie's high school position was shortstop. And he's played there, I think, over the weekend, and his throws have been just fine. They want Lux to play second because of his bat, and they're hoping for the best. But everybody worries about Mookie. Mookie would play anywhere. He's just thrilled to be in the infield.
If it's about his bat, where does it matter where Lux plays, second or short? If it's about his bat, what's the difference?
Oh, because the throws from shortstop to first are longer than the throws from second to first.
And that's going to affect his batting?
No, they want his bat in the lineup.
And fewer errors, presumably. So it'll be
and fewer errors.
Yeah, they'll.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. His bat's still going to be in the lineup no matter where he plays.
Right.
Yeah. They want him at second. And the other issue is Max Muncy made a lot of errors at third last year. So they really are hoping to have Lux on the right side, Muncy on the left side, that maybe the error total will go down some. But yeah, they want Lux to play. They figure Lux will hit 260, 270, and he's going to bat ninth. So, but they want him in the lineup, but they just don't want him playing shortstop.
Well, makes sense to me.
Didn't Mookie play center field at some point in his career?
Early in his career. I think. Didn't he, Bob? Yeah.
He came up as a second baseman when he was in the Red Sox organization. When the Red Sox called him up, they converted him to the outfield. He played a little bit of center. Then, of course, he played right for several years.
Yeah.
But he made it known last year. I mean, it was common knowledge that he likes the infield better. As good an outfielder or right fielder as he was, he prefers playing second or short because he's in the game constantly. So he's perfectly fine either of those infield positions.
Well, so what is the general sense of the Dodgers these days, Mitch? Are they still the favorite to win the NL West?
Well, I think so. Although, you know, Arizona, you know, came from out of nowhere last year. The issue with the Dodgers at this point is there are 4 and 5 starters, but the guy that I think has the inside, Paxton will be number 4. Number 5, it's between Michael Grove and Gavin Stone. And Gavin Stone has been tremendous. The 2 or 3 games that he's pitched so far, I've caught a couple of them. They just can't, he just misses bat. So I think the starting pitching is going to be okay. We've already lost one of our young candidates for the starting rotation, Emmett Sheehan. And I just found out this morning that Graterol is hurting.
Again, yes.
But over the weekend they mentioned, and he's not on the roster now, the 40 man or the 26 man, but he will be. But Daniel Hudson is going to be on the roster, as is Blake Treinen. Both of them will be there. Yeah. Well, closer is Phillips. Closer will be Phillip.
Where's Tony Gonsolin?
Gonsolin is out. He had Tommy John. He may come back later in the year, but probably not. The guy who's surprising everybody in terms of when he may come back is Walker Buehler. Buehler's now throwing the mound, I think. So we may see Buehler before we see Clayton Kershaw even.
No.
I'll tell you, I think Justin Eigenman is going to make you guys sorry you got rid of him.
Who's
He's
that?
He's pitching lights out for the Red Sox in camp.
Oh, Eigenman. Well, our cupboard in AAA and AA is very well stocked, so I'm not too concerned about it. But we'll see what happens. You guys need all the help you can get with your pitching.
Well, so far so good. We're very impressed with Slayton. We're very impressed with Weissert that we got from the Yankees for Verdugo. Yeah, Don Weissert's pitching very well, and Hagenman's pitching pretty well too.
Yeah, but you got Kenley as your closer, I think, if he's healthy. Good luck.
So far.
Yeah.
Good luck. So, Mitch, I getting back to our conversations in prior weeks, I noticed that the Milwaukee Bucks are on the West Coast, and they barely lost to the Lakers. Lakers are playing really well these days.
The Lakers, the teams that the Lakers can't beat, though, in the West, they can't beat Denver.
Right.
And they can't beat Sacramento. So, you know, we're 36-30, and I didn't listen to the Bucks game. I figured that was a slam dunk loser, but they did win that one thanks to D'Angelo's, 42 or 44 points.
I caught the last 6 minutes of the game, and the Lakers, you know, mean, the Bucks came back and had a lead by 6 points. I thought, okay, that's the end of the game. And darn if the Lakers didn't come back and win it. And then whoever it was, Dinwiddie blocks the last shot and that was it. So, you know, we always sort of, you know, make fun of the Lakers, but you know, the West is so ridiculous. The Lakers might make it through and lose to Denver. You know,
well, we've got another game against Sacramento up there, I think Wednesday.
Okay.
And we'll see. They've got to beat, they're going to have to beat one of those two teams to get to the finals, to the Western Conference finals.
Well,
either
I mean,
Denver or Sacramento.
The Sacramento's not in the playoffs, are they?
Oh, I think they are.
I think they're out of the playoffs. We're talking about teams like, I mean, I'm not impressed with either Minnesota or Oklahoma City when it comes to the playoffs.
Neither am I.
So, and then you got Phoenix, who I'm not enthralled with either, you know, because their lack of a bench.
Mitch, Sacramento. Sacramento is seventh.
I'm sorry, Bob?
They're seventh. They're 36-27.
Okay. Yeah. And so the Lakers, if they can't beat either of those two teams, they're not going to go very far.
No. And they still might not go very far, but you know, they always find a way to win these games. And you know, we keep, you know, saying they're terrible and then they beat Milwaukee without LeBron.
Yep.
So, you know, it's hard. And by the way, Milwaukee, you know, aside from that loss to the Lakers, and of course they got clobbered by Golden State, seem, you know, they beat the Clippers yesterday.
Yeah.
They seem to be doing pretty well for themselves.
But their two big guys did not play for the Clips.
Correct.
George and Kawhi didn't play yet.
Yeah, but they beat, right. That's correct. So you're fair point, but you know, it's still on the road, which, you know.
Yep.
So we'll see. And then of course the Celtics, you know, Bob, I'm sure you are well, you know, the blowing up lead to Cleveland was not good. That was not
two
a good
games game. That if they're going to lose any games at all, I'm glad those were the games they lost. Cleveland and
Bob,
Denver.
It is 10 of.
Thank you, Cindy.
Still have a hand. Don't we have a hand up?
No.
I think I misheard her.
So in other words, we won 11 in a row, Peter. So then we lost to Cleveland. Yeah, we blew a 22-point lead. But we also know what Cleveland's been like lately. So that wasn't really too shocking. Although
yeah,
I think
who did Cleveland, Cleveland lost the Nets last night. So.
Yeah. And then the Denver
you're right,
game.
You're right.
The Denver game. Well, you kind of expected that a little bit.
Right.
You know,
but the thing is, if Boston is the best of the best team, which I still think they are, they're going to have to figure out a way of, you know, they beat Phoenix. I'm assuming that it's going to be Boston and Denver in the finals.
I think so too.
I don't see why not.
And Denver is a really good home team. And so Boston got to, you know, unless Boston gets the home court advantage, they better win all their games at home. Because Denver is pretty good on the road, is pretty good on their home court. So that might be a really good series. Might be a really good series. But Boston plays Portland tonight. They should win that game. And then I don't know what to do after that.
Utah.
Oh, well, they should beat Utah too.
Two wins.
They've gone downhill.
Yeah. Well, you know, unless they fall, you know, so that's fine. Did any of you hear about the high school game? I can't remember Camden and Manasquan, I think it was. I'm going to send you guys an article about it. Apparently, Manasquan hit a game winning shot, except that the refs said it was the shot was after the buzzer. And so Camden won the game. The problem was that everybody appears to think that the ruling was wrong, and the refs left the court when there was a whole lot of things that went wrong with that game. And so Camden won, and Manasquan is now going to court to try to sort of reverse the decision. And
how do you do that?
Well, apparently they're trying. And
can't they appeal? I assume there's a high school sports federation. You're talking New Jersey, right?
Correct. So yes, there's a high school federation, but what the Manasquan folks are saying is that the federation didn't follow their own rules. And so I guess that's their case. I mean, but you know, they're going to lose. They've lost so far, but.
Wasn't there something about they couldn't do a video review of it or something like that?
They're not allowed to use video reviews in the thing, but the refs aren't supposed to leave the court until the final verdict is made, and they left the court. And, you know, apparently the video shows that the Manasquan shot was good, which of course is irrelevant, right, Michael? Because they're not supposed to use, they can't use video.
Right.
So the refs.
But if they could have, they could have solved it.
They could have solved it. And apparently the refs have apologized to Manasquan for screwing up, but they still gave the victory to Camden.
Did it keep them out of the playoffs or tournament?
Out of the finals. Oh. Yeah, out of the division, whatever it is, finals. So, you know, that's a big deal for their players, you know, and if there are any of them who are going to be, you know, who are being scouted for college basketball, that what they're arguing in court is that's a major loss, right? I mean, because scouts go to these games. So anyway, it's a mess. And, you know,
I won't say that refereeing is worse than it was 10 or 15 years ago, but there sure seemed to be, and I don't know about high school, but certainly on the college level and even in the pros, there's a lot of really bad calls, bad refereeing these days.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think, well,
it might have gotten worse, Mitch. It just might.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, it's either that or, you know, the thing is, you know, video's all over the place. You know, back 10 years ago, there wasn't nearly the, you know, the video and all that stuff that's available then that there is now. So it may be, I don't know what's the case, that it's.
But even before we see the videos, the announcers react quickly. Why did they make that call? It didn't happen. You know, they don't even have to look at the video to judge the call.
You may be right.
Oh, the guy that you ought to hear rant is Michael Thompson. With the Lakers, he goes off if a video replay takes more than 30 seconds, because he says, I can tell right off that that's a bad call and it needs to be overturned. Takes them 5 minutes to make a decision. He said, I knew within 20 seconds it was a bad call.
That happens in all sports. Even the new instant replay rule in baseball that's been in effect now for several years, they take way too long. Speaking of that, okay, why can't the four umpires that are there on the field consult? Why does it have to go to New York? Why can't umpires get together and say, okay, this is being challenged. Let's review it in our own rooms. This is why we're here.
Let them have tablets like they have in the NFL.
Yeah.
They could make the decision on the field. They could get together, look at the tablet, and make that call probably a lot faster than having to go to New York to get the call made or overturned or whatever.
Late in that game with Boston and Phoenix the other night, there was a call. You probably remember this, Bob. There was a call where, I can't remember who had the ball, where Boston had the ball, I think. And it was who touched the ball last? The ref said that the Phoenix guy touched it last, I believe. But they put it on replay and they slowed it down and they overturned the call. What they were saying was, you know, with the naked eye, it seemed as though, you know, you could tell one way, but when you actually slow it down, the ball had or hadn't left the player's hand or something like that, you know. But anyway, it was overturned. But the point being, slowing it down gave you the more accurate view of what actually happened with the ball. So I don't know if you say that was a good thing or not, you know, in terms of video replay.
Okay, Bob, you've got a hand.
All right, we got 1 minute, too.
Okay, so, Herbie, you're up.
Go ahead, Herbie.
So just real quick, my question about the whole New York, you know, the calls being reviewed in New York, I thought the idea was so that way it was always being reviewed by a neutral party, like there could be no bias or anything like that, and that's why I always thought the calls were reviewed in New York.
But here's the thing, Herbie. Isn't an umpire by definition a man with no bias? No matter where he's umpiring, he's got no bias.
Right, but would they be biased against their own call? Like, you know, would they be less willing to overturn it as opposed to a neutral person?
Oh, I see. So in other words, if one umpire makes a call, the other three might go along with him because they're there with him. They're his colleagues, and this way there might be some speculation.
I think there's a bigger issue too, and that has to do with the fans. You know, so if it's a controversial call, it's a big game, the stadium is full, and you know, if the reviewers in New York overturn it, the umpires are at least shielded from, you know, if fans' displeasure if the call goes against the home base. I think that's another thing that they take into consideration. I'm just not sure it makes sense.
Yeah. That's a good point, though, Herbie. Maybe that's it.
Hey, you have less than a minute,
Bob. Anyway, we're going to have to wrap this up. I do want to extend my best wishes once again to Luther. Luther, we do miss you. We haven't heard from you in a long time. I hope that you are recuperating from your situation with your voice and that you're back with us sooner rather than later. In the meantime, thank you very much, Mitch, for, as you put it, being our designated hitter. I call you just as valuable as the rest of us. We appreciate
it. Well, I appreciate that.
And, of course, Don, Michael, and Peter, we thank you as well. Take care, everybody. Go safe with God's abundant blessings. Thank you, Cindy. Thank you, Brad. Thank you, everybody. Have a great day.